everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Bondor, and I am a best-selling author, mentor, mindset and manifesting coach, and public speaker. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, we teach, and then we help others. Hello, everybody. Today, my guest is Monika Johnson. Welcome, Monika. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know what? I'm absolutely honored to have you and for you to be on this podcast. And I'm so excited for you to share your story. So we're going to get started here, my dear. And if you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and whatever you want to say. And then after that, if you just want to slowly make the transition into telling your story, and we'll just get right at it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Right on.
So I am born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, in the United States. I have a daughter. She is 13 years old in junior high. I am the oldest of two children. I have a younger brother and a host of nieces and nephews, and a few close family members, but not too many. And I have been a Pulse model for the past 4 years now, along with doing the influencing and also a blogger. So a little more about me is I am a survivor. I survived, had a difficult childhood, a little more difficult than others, of course. I was bullied badly, not just within my peers, but also within my family. I was, a heavyset child. I was made to feel like something was wrong with me because there was really no one else that looked like me. And again, I was made to feel like I was the problem, that I wasn't beautiful, that I will only be beautiful if I was small. And it did a number on me, mentally, physically, emotionally. And my confidence was not at an all time high. It was low. It was, more or less, the confidence, my bank account and the confidence bank was just in a negative. It was not there at all. I felt like that I wasn't good enough. I felt like I wasn't, that I should just basically take whatever's handed to me. And, a lot of times, especially growing up in 80s, early 90s, it was basically, respect adults, listen to what they say, just take whatever they say, that's what it is. And you're not supposed to say anything in your defense. You're not supposed to stick up for yourself because it's like you're back talking. And so when things were being said to me, not just from my peers at school, but from adults in my family as well, I was basically like, in my mind, I'm saying, okay, I'm supposed to just take this and not say anything because I didn't feel like I had anybody in my corner. I didn't feel like I felt like I was alone. I didn't have a person there for me of no kind, because like I said, I was just, you know, made to feel like this is what I'm supposed to take. And that set me on a course, you know, throughout my teen years and my 20s and my early 30s to take whatever's given to you. Don't, you know, stick up for yourself. Just let people just talk to you however, and that's supposed to be, that's what it is, you know. Because like I said, I couldn't be understood because there was nobody around me that looked like me. You know, I took after my mother's side of the family because, you know, they're, you know, big hips, you know, they're heavy set women, you know. And I felt like I didn't fit in anywhere. You know, I really didn't have, you know, many friends because I was taunted, you know, on a daily basis. You know, it was called names that I didn't want to talk about. My stuff used to be taken from me, you know, be, you know, beat up after school, you know, all because of the way I looked, you know. And I couldn't even have, you know, my teachers weren't even, they weren't no help, you know. I remember one day a classmate had said something really foul to me, and I told him to shut up. I don't even remember what he even said, honestly. I don't even remember. But my second grade teacher, she, I'm the one that got in trouble because I said the word shut up. And when I tried to explain to her, like, you know, this is what he said to me, that wasn't the problem. The problem was that I told him to shut up. And I was like, you know, yeah, I officially knew that I had no adults in my corner. In middle school, my guidance counselor wasn't even any help either, because my bullying got even worse once I got to junior high, where anything that I wore, anything that I said, you know, how I looked, you know, it was just a recurring problem on a daily basis. And I was like, I would ask some days, like, why me? Why do I have to be a verbal punching bag for people on a daily basis? Not just at school, but within my own family as well, where I felt like I was second best. I never felt like I was good enough because, you know, I was never told I was beautiful. So in my mind, I wasn't. To figure out ways, you know, I tried and thought about every kind of way of trying to lose weight. You know, I was starving myself. I started being a closet eater, where I didn't want to eat around people because then something would be said to me then. I even had thought about just taking my own life, because I was like, you know, why is this being done to me? Like, what is it that I did to be treated this way? And that was as early as like being 13, where I felt like, you know, why is this happening? Where I'm just like, is it even worth living for? You know? And like I said, I really didn't have any friends. Because I was talked about, you know, right to my face. I didn't even matter. You know, my feelings weren't valid to anybody. I didn't feel like I was being protected. I didn't feel like I was being treated fairly. And when I tried to, you know, get help, it wasn't there for me. You know, it just wasn't, you know. And I felt like, you know, what is the point of me living if I'm keep being treated like this, you know? I mean, now I know, you know, to be able to share my story with another person. But back then I was a mess, you know. I didn't even know the word depression back then, but that's what I was suffering from, you know.
What shocks me is none of your family members were even aware, or they just didn't care.
Some of them just didn't care. It was mostly my paternal side of my family that was doing the most, you know, because it was like they never took the time to get to know me. They only focused on my weight. And because, you know, my sibling, he's tall and skinny. They thought I was taking food from him and not letting him eat. You know, they just only focused on my physical. They never thought to really look at me and get to know me as a person. They just saw, oh, she's fat, she needs help, she needs to go do this, she needs to do that, you know. And it's like, as early as 5 years old, I can remember.
I got a question. Did you ever get a chance to explain to your family members how this had deeply hurt you and how it literally changed your life?
I tried to talk to my father about it several times, but he wasn't the type of person to really face things head on. He would just act like they didn't happen or they didn't exist, or he would be focused on himself.
Right.
It was, and I had told him, I sent him this really long text message, you know, this around the time that he was sick, you know, and I had sent him this really long text message and everything, because I had, by that time I had gone through therapy, I had had my weight loss surgery, because I had, you know, to do weight loss surgery, you have to go to therapy. So I went through therapy, and taught, and you know, was trying to talk to him about it. The only thing his response back to me was, "I gotta, you know, talk with my doctor about what's going on with me. So I'll get back to you on that." And to think that he almost didn't have his firstborn. You know, I could have been gone. And it's that told me he just didn't care, you know.
What about the relationship with you and your brother?
Me and my brother, you know, we're close. He didn't know that was going on, you know, because he's 5 years younger than me. So he didn't realize all that was going on.
Okay.
He didn't find out until much later about what was going on. And he found out, he knew a little bit about some things, but then he found out after I went to therapy, and he didn't know the extent of things. And he confronted my father, you know, about it. You know, he just, you know, he's the younger brother and I'm the older sister. He's still very protective of me. But he did confront him about it, and basically, you know, that side of the family we just don't deal with. You know, I think for me mentally and emotionally, that's better off for me. Mm-hmm. because you know, if I had to be around them, it's gonna take me back to that where I was feeling before, and I'm trying to get out of that where I don't feel that way ever again. At all for myself. And I refuse to take my daughter around that energy, because I don't want her to be like me.
Yeah.
Where she has that toxic energy, she's around. I'm trying to have her avoid it at all cost.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times I didn't understand, you know, for many years I didn't understand, like, why, you know. Like I said, my father already was very absent. He was very absent already. And he showed the favoritism between the siblings. It was very evident. And I couldn't understand, you know, why keep him there? You know, what was the whole point? You know, because, you know, it was evident. Everybody could see it, who his favorite kid was. You know, my birthday is in November. So November would come around and it would be like, oh, happy birthday. I didn't have time to get you anything, but I'll get you next year. You understand, don't you? You understand, don't you? That's a term that I hate.
Just yeah, to put it out there. I can understand why.
I can't stand the term be patient. That's a term that I've learned to loathe as well. I'm getting better with it, but the term patient, I simply loathe. I don't like that word. I don't like, you understand, don't you? I didn't have time, but then April comes around when my brother's birthday is. My brother would get tons of stuff. And then when I was feeling some type of way, it was, oh girl, get over it. You know, your birthday's, you know, your birthday's in November. You know, just get over it, you know? And it's simply not something that, you know, it took some people now to realize I was feeling some type of way. And now they get it.
Mm-hmm.
After I had to break things down, and I'm always asked, like, well, why did you say anything? I'm a kid.
Right.
I was taught, you know, don't back talk. Don't say anything. Just take it. Take whatever is said to you. There's, you know, a kid is supposed to respect their father. But what about the respect to the child? I never felt respected. I mean, I had some sort of a miniature closure. Not the full closure that I wanted, but I had a partial closing the day before my father passed. Where I sat there in a room with him. He couldn't say, he couldn't talk. Of course, you know, he was in hospice. And I sat there just, you know, kind of brought up a lot of things. And the last thing I said to him when I walked out the door was, you know, I forgive you for everything. And I walked out the door. And then 24 hours later, my half sister calls me and said he was gone. So I kind of felt like maybe he was waiting for me to come there to say what I needed to say. And then, you know, he would be able to transition over, you know, knowing that, you know, I was like, you know, it is what it is. I'm not going to get the closure that I want. I'm not going to get what I deserve, what I want. This is what's being given to me and I got to take it for the last time.
How did you feel after saying that?
I felt like a partial closure, not the complete closure that I wanted, but I just said, you know, it is what it is. I'm gonna have to just deal with it, and then try and, you know, deal with it in other ways, and try and maybe share my testimony with people for them to know that I survived, you know, depression, survived mental health issues. I crawl so other people can walk. And then I can inspire somebody else with my story.
How did your childhood affect your 20s, your 30s?
Again, I was basically, I carried on with being given anything that's handed to you. You know, whether it's attention, you know, like I said, you know, 80s and 90s, you know, curvy women, we were not looked at as beautiful. We were looked at as disgusting. We were looked at as we were the duff, the fat, ugly friend. So I wasn't respected. Nor, I didn't have people respect me. I didn't have people give me any loyalty. It was always, you know, just being handed whatever was given to me, whatever attention was given to me. I was like, hey, you know, this is how it looks. I guess this is all I'm going to get. And that went on with, you know, in dating, again, with family members, with jobs. You know, I just took, again, whatever was handed to me, that's what I took. I then feel like I was deserving of anything, because I'm like, well, obviously maybe I'm not deserving of whatever because of how I look, you know. Why should I respect myself when nobody else does? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, how I felt. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't until after I had my daughter, I had her at 30, where I felt like somebody actually did love me and care about me. You know, because she sees mommy. She doesn't see anything else. And then I felt like with my size, because, you know, with depression and everything, of course, I got heavier and heavier. I felt like I was embarrassing her, you know, at her school functions, even though she told me I wasn't. I up here mentally felt that I was. And I was like, I got to do something, you know, for my health, for her, you know. I want her to be able to, I want to be able to live. Mm-hmm. I want to see her graduate, mm-hmm. you know, see her in adulthood. So I knew something had to be done. Because at an alarming rate, I was getting heavy and heavier and using food as a crutch. And I didn't want to use it as a crutch anymore, but I didn't know how. So I had started this new company at the time. And, you know, for a while, insurance companies wouldn't even cover weight loss surgery. It was always out of pocket. So I just put it out of mind. I was still trying, you know, every possible diet fad there possibly was. And finally, I started seeing that insurance companies were covering weight loss surgery. And I started seeing that my job was covering it at the time. And I just started seeing it. That's like in an email or something. And I was like, oh, okay, they're starting to cover more surgeries, you know, whatever. So then I got a little newsletter in the mail where I saw again that they're covering weight loss surgeries. And I'm like, okay, you know, I just saw this email. Now I'm getting this thing in the mail.
You're getting signs.
And I'm getting all these signs, you know. And then again, they had more emails coming, more newsletters coming, you know, even in my personal email, they're coming. And I'm just like, well, you know, maybe I'll look into this. Maybe, you know, there's something to this or whatever. So there happened to be a facility across from where my mom worked that they did weight loss surgeries. So I, you know, booked an appointment. I went and talked to a nutritionist and the surgeon. And I don't know, I just went in there and I just poured out crying. And she's like, you know, and she just sat there with me and just gave me a hug, you know, and just was like, you know, it's okay. You know, you're here now. We're going to help you. Cause I just felt like this was my last shot. If not, I pretty much was probably nowhere in 5 years, so I was going to be dead. And I really felt that way. I felt, it was going to happen.
Were you having like physical health issues as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I was having physical health issues as well. But like I said, my doctor that I had at the time, she was very helpful to me. You know, I've had doctors in the past, they just say lose weight, but it's like, maybe there's more than just that. It's not that simple. You could say it all day long, but it's not that simple. They never asked me, you know, mentally what's going on with you, or, you know, maybe you should talk to somebody. You know, it was never that, never trying to really help me, because one issue will like be a domino effect. It will resolve other issues. And so I went and talked to the surgeon, talked to the nutritionist, and they said, okay, you'll be a good candidate. Let's start the proceedings. You know, it's going to be, you know, 6 months. A supervised dieting, and then we'll set the date officially for your surgery. I said, you know, okay, what do I need to do?
That is one question I want to ask you. Is there, well, I know that there's a protocol when you go in for a surgery like that. What was the required weight that they wanted you to lose prior? And how much did you, so with your surgery, was it a band in your stomach or what? Can you explain that process for me?
I had the gastric sleeve where they cut 80% of your stomach.
Okay.
So they, insurance requires 6 months of supervised weight loss before they'll, you know, before of course they approve it. And what I did was of course 6 months, and in that 6 months, the nutritionist helps you come up with a plan. The nutritionist helps you, you know, of course I had to talk. That's when I had to talk to the therapist. That's when I started going into therapy, where I found that I had suppressed a lot of stuff. And it came into light once I talked to the therapist, like everything that I had suppressed, it just came out, you know, it was just coming out like a faucet. I couldn't turn the faucet off. I was just talking about anything because I felt like I couldn't talk to anybody about what I was going through.
How freeing was that for you?
It felt like a huge weight had been lifted off of me, mm-hmm. you know, entirely. And then I had made friends at work, where when I would go walking and stuff, they would walk with me. You know, of course they could walk faster than me or whatever. And they were really helpful with me. You know, they were really good. And I was well over 400 pounds, you know, at the time when I first started the process. And then I got down to 325. I got down to 325. Let me back up. I was over 400. I was about 415 when I started the process. And then by the time I was ready for surgery, I had gotten down to about 350. Mm-hmm. When they said, okay, you gotta do the 6 months. So 6 months came, I was down to 350, but I just kept losing, you know, going by the plan that they wanted me to do. And they wanted me to shrink my stomach as much as possible for them to cut that 80% off of the stomach. And so I went through therapy. My therapist, he agreed, he passed me, because that was the next phase. And then the next phase, of course, was the 6 months, which I did. And they were able to submit everything to insurance. And this is how I knew it was meant for me to have this surgery, because usually they say insurance takes about 3 to 6 weeks for them to come back. They came back in 3 days.
Wow.
And said, you know, you're approved. And I just, again, you know, I'm a crybaby, so I was just crying back. But then they threw me a curveball and they said, well, you're going to need, you know, you got to put money down on the surgery of like $5,000. I'm like, I'm a single mother. Where am I going to get $5,000 from? Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, with all that happening, me preparing for my surgery and everything, I had lost my my maternal grandfather, who I was very close to. So I was dealing with that. And luckily, I didn't use food as a crutch for me to deal with, you know, the grieving of losing my grandfather. I had, you know, started programming my mind to do other things instead of using food. So what I started doing was the cell phone that I had, I built like a little playlist of music. So when I'm anxious, I'll listen to music, or I'll go for a walk. I'll, you know, put my headphones on and listen to music and walk and things like that. That's stuff that I started doing. And then so that was November 2016 is when I lost my grandfather. And so by January, I had to go on like on an all liquid diet, of course, to prepare myself, because my surgery ended up being March of 2017. March 17th, 2017 was my weight loss surgery. I was nervous. as anybody can be. And of course, you know, the anesthesiologist, he was great. He even took my, you know, he took my vitals. He did an EKG on me. And he said, I have to be honest with you. He says, it's a good thing that you're here, you know, getting the surgery today. Because from what your EKG was telling me, he said, the right side of your heart was starting to go bad. So luckily, it's in enough time where it can repair itself. And you can, as the more weight you lose, the better it would be. That scared me out of my wits because, like I said, at that time, my daughter was in first grade. And and I don't know, you know what would have happened. I didn't want to leave my child. I didn't want to leave my baby, you know. So I was glad I had it because I had a long talk with her about it. You know, she was only 7 at the time, but I told her, you know, mommy's going to be okay. I'm going to have the surgery. I'm doing this for you. And I even told her once she got older, she's 13 now. Once she got older, I was going to explain to her further, like, I didn't want to feel like I was embarrassing you. She says, you know, you're not embarrassing me. She's, you know, I'm proud of you. Well, no matter what you look like, you know. And that made me smile, but I still, for me, I needed to change myself, you know. So I had my surgery, of course. I go through the whole process, you know, first, nothing but liquids. You know, then they'll introduce solid foods back to you, slowly but surely. But it's an adjustment that you know what you can eat, what you can't eat, you know, what will make you sick, what's not going to make you sick. You know, it's still, you know, a couple years later, you know, I'm still dealing with that where my taste buds change, you know, off and on. I know my limits now, you know, I know don't get 4 or 5 slices of pizza, you know, just get, maybe eat a half of one and you're going to be full. You know, people don't know that that's your limit because if you go over, you know, then you're going to suffer it's the consequences of it. You know, you can make yourself very sick, but I, you know, it's maybe learn more about myself, and readjusting myself, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally, you know, as well. And it helped me. And it was something where, you know, I had lost where, you know, I walk up to people that I knew that I hadn't seen in so long. I walk up to them and say, hi, how are you doing? And they would just look at me like, who are you? They didn't even know where I was.
How much did you end up losing?
I lost over 100+ pounds.
Good for you.
So I lost like a whole person.
Yeah. Good for you.
You know, I'll have to send you like a side by side so you can see the difference, you know. Yeah. But like I said, there are people who didn't recognize me at all. And they're like, you know, who are you? And I had to keep talking to them and tell them how I knew them. And they were like, oh my gosh, you know, what happened to the rest? And the person said, what happened to the rest of you? And I said, well, she's gone. Mm-hmm. She's gone. She's not coming back. This is me now. This is who I am now. I'm in a new phase, a new chapter, a new phase in my life. And it was crazy how I hadn't seen my paternal grandmother. I hadn't seen her in so long. And when I finally saw her at my uncle's funeral, her oldest son, the first thing she said to me was not, how are you doing? Not a hug, not nothing. The first thing she said to me was, oh my gosh, you've lost so much weight. So still, not getting to know me.
Yeah.
Just looking at my physical.
Yeah.
And I had to start learning to don't take what's just simply handed to you. Demand your respect, which that's what I am. That's in the phase that I'm in. I'm going to demand my respect. If you can't respect me, then you need to just step to the side. Like, here's my table. Mm-hmm. If here's a bowl of respect. If you're not wanting to pour me the same bowl, then you need to remove yourself from my table. Either you remove yourself, or I will remove you from my table, but you can go somewhere else to another table because I have no room for that over here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So looking at your whole entire journey and with what you just said, you know, you demand respect now, which you should. And I'm so, so proud of you.
Thank you.
Do you feel that that was probably your most memorable thing that you wanted during that time? Like what is it that you learned the most? Was it that demanding respect or?
Demanding or respect.
Because there would have been so many different things that you learned throughout that process. Like so many.
There was.
You know, and so what was it that stood out the most for you?
Not only I could fit into an extra large outfit, but that, like I said, I'm going to demand my respect. Mm-hmm. You're not a person who's not going to just talk to me crazy. Talk to me however you feel that I'm supposed to be talked to. I'm going to stand up for myself, mm-hmm. and take control over my life, not just simply take what's handed to me. Because mm-hmm. if what you're handing to me is bogus, I don't want it.
Right.
You can keep it and you can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just listening to you. And another question had popped up because so many people are going through this right now. Like so many people. And, you know, we are a society of looks. You know, they always say that the skinny people are the ones that have it all together and blah, blah, blah. You know, which is so not true because nobody knows what's going on the inside of us, what we're thinking or what we're going through or whatever, because obesity, yes, lots of women have obesity and men, but lots of women also have anorexia.
Yes, and bulimia.
Which is totally on the different spectrum of things, right? And it all stems back to mental illness and everything too as well. What is it that you would say to these individuals that are listening to your story right now? Because they are resonating with you 100%. Like I am resonating with you 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm, you know, at a different stage in my life now where, you know, I'm happier. I am more comfortable going places by myself. I would get up and take myself to the movies, take myself out to dinner, take myself even just walking in the park by myself. Whereas before I was so scared to even go out the house by myself because, you know, I feel like when I'm walking down the street somewhere and I hear people laughing, and I think they're laughing at me.
Yeah.
You know, it's a slow process. And then I'm trying new things. Like, I'm, you know, I actually, you know, very seldom, but I do it. But, you know, wear a bathing suit or wear a pair of shorts, you know, because it's very seldom that I do. But I'm just doing things that I didn't do in my 20s and 30s that I'm like, maybe I need to, you know, try it and see how it goes. You know, I even rode a roller coaster, you know, like a few years ago. And I had rode a roller coaster since my 20s. And it felt great, you know, because it was always where, you know, I was too heavy to even fit into it. Mm-hmm. So then for me to get into it, I was just like, wow, you know, I can actually do this. And then now, you know, for a while at the beginning of my journey of losing my weight, I would still think that I was heavier in my mind. So I would go for those larger sizes and I'd be like, that's not me anymore. I don't need this larger size. I need to go get to the smaller size, which it was difficult for me. Now it's great. I'm excited that I can just get a smaller size shirt and pants or whatever and fit into it and look great. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I still have excess, a lot of excess skin that I'm having removed surgically.
That's what I wanted to get into next, is where are you now in your life?
Well, I've already had one skin removal from my abdomen. Which that was 20 pounds of excess skin that my doctor removed. And now I'm in the process of getting, the next area removed will probably be either my arms or my thighs, getting that skin removed. Of course, you know, because of COVID and plus I had a severe knee injury, you know, of course I gained a few pounds back. So I'm in the process now of trying to lose that back again. So, you know, I'm back on, you know, my journey where I know now I can do it, you know, counting my calories, getting my exercise in, my walking, my water intake, you know, framing my mind different. And then when I get upset or if I get angry or whatever, I'm not going to turn to food as my comfort, whereas I did before, because food was always was my friend and did disappoint me. Mm-hmm. It didn't make me mad. It made me happy, mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, trying to explain that to people, some people were like, well, just lose the weight. It's not that simple. You know, you can lose weight and be great, but if you still feel ugly on the inside, that's not helping yourself at all.
See, this is what I want to say right now, because with my coaching, one of the major areas of my coaching, which is absolutely my passion, is on identity. Because of the journey that I've gone through, you know, growing up, my identity was I was ugly, I was dumb, I was stupid, I was never going to amount to anything. You're good right. for me. And then, of course, as I got into my adolescence and the words got even worse, I was bitch, I was slut, things like that. That was the identity I carried. And it wasn't until I made that personal choice within myself, because that is what caused me to become an alcoholic. I was addicted to alcohol for many, many years. You know that. Everybody mm-hmm. knows that now, right? But this is what I teach people, is that identity that we carry is not ours. It's been drilled into us, drilled into us, drilled into us, drilled into us. Where does that right. identity come from? That I identity change. From your yes. father. That came from your father, right? That's no different than the identity that I carried. That came from my brother. My brother drilled that into me over and over and over. But where did that identity come from him? It came from my father. So that's what I teach people now, because we get stuck in our story and we need to separate, because we have the choice to create who we want to be in the future. And the only way that you can do that is, number one, you have to look back. You have to find out where that identity started.
Yeah.
And then from there, that's when you can start to shift and change your belief systems as well, too. And you can become that individual that you always wanted to be. And you're on that journey.
Yeah.
You're on
that. That's why when I started Plus Modeling, it just kind of happened by accident. I wasn't even trying to get into modeling. It just happened for me. I had turned 40 and I was looking great. And I was like, you know, I've never done a boudoir shoot, so I'm going to do one. And I found a female photographer in the area that did them and, you know, posed for the pictures. And she was like, you know, she said, you're so photogenic, you know, have you thought about modeling? I said, well, I did model in high school. I was on a modeling team on there where I was the only plus model on the team, of course. And, you know, I don't know. I just felt like the hype was always on me because, oh, she's plus size. She's actually, you know, she's big. So she's, you know, she's doing something, you know. And, I got some, you know, negative comments from people back then when I did that, but celebrate it more now. But my photographer had asked me, she was like, have you thought about plus mine? I said, I really hadn't, you know, I'm just doing this because I'm turning 40. and I've lost 100 plus pounds, and I want to, just do these pictures for me, just look good. She said, maybe you should look into it. I said, I'll think about it. She's like, no, seriously, really, you really should. So I started, by this time I already had, started, I was just about to start my blog. I had thought about doing it. I hadn't did it yet, but I was thinking about it. So I, went on social media, found some modeling groups and joined them to see, how to start it, how to get into it. And one particular model out of Virginia took me under her wing and she showed me the ropes. Of what of what I needed to do, and I thank her for, I still talk to her to this day. I've done a few shoots with her, when I traveled to Virginia Beach, and now I've been on several magazine, I've been on a few covers. I'm doing a fashion show coming up in, next year in 2024. I've even got into motivational speaking, where I've shared my story in a few different cities, Dallas and New York. I'm hoping to share it here. I'm wanting to actually start a nonprofit for, women and teens and adolescents that have mental health issues and depression issues and have issues with, their body. Mm-hmm. So that's next for me. But, in the meantime, I've also started my blog, my motivational speaking, my plus modeling is getting, more and more, where I'm getting more followers, getting more. My face is getting out there to more people, which, I'm excited about. And just overall, just getting my story out there. So that's when that helps me, because that's helping another person know that I survived it.
Yes.
You can survive it too. Because like I said, the way things are now with bullying, it's more in depth than it was when I was growing up. When I was growing up, there was no social media or nothing like that. Now it's at an all-time high.
Well, what's really sad is your child can be, sitting in their bedroom and they're being bullied right in the privacy of their own home. And that just breaks my heart. Anybody can be bullied anywhere at any time. And it's so sad. It's so, so sad.
Yeah.
Before you were talking about your modeling and your blog and everything, anything that is mentioned is all going to be in the podcast notes. So if you want to take a look at the blog, all of it, it's all going to be there. Now we're getting into the closing of our interview, my dear. And is there any final words that you would like to say to the audience listening?
I would just want to say, do not simply just take what is handed to you. Earn your place, earn your spot, because you are your team, your own star team player. Make yourself number one. Make yourself the priority. Do not accept the word option, because you're not an option. If you feel like a person or a place or whatever situation, whatever is making you feel like that option, obviously that's not for you. Make yourself the priority. Make yourself feel whole, because you have to make yourself feel beautiful and courteous on the inside. Then it will shine through on the outside. And that is the most rewarding thing ever, is waking up and knowing that you not only inspire another person, but you're inspiring yourself, and you're living by your word. You're living your truth, and you're getting up saying, you know what? Today is a new day. It's a new chapter. I'm going to make the best of it. Not saying sometimes you won't feel like, oh, this again, but just make yourself the priority, the prize. I can't say enough. Priority. You're the prize. You're number one. Because at the end of the day, if you make yourself priority, make yourself number one, make yourself the prize, then it's going to feed into everybody else feeling that that's going to gravitate to you. It's going to be more of positive energy. You don't want negative, toxic energy coming into your space. Protect your energy, protect your space at all costs. It's like think of yourself as a stock option. You want your stock to rise. You want your value to your personal value to rise. That is what your goals are for yourself. Don't make your stock tip tumble, because that's not what you want to do. You want it to rise. You want it to be of some value, and that's what you are to people. They're going to value you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely beautiful. Well, now in closing, that was a lot. That was a very, very good interview. And I want to thank you for sharing your story. And I want to thank you for having the bravery. You fought through your tears to tell your story. And that was a tough one for you. And I get that. And I understand that. And I want to thank you for sharing it with me, sharing it with the audience. But I also want to thank you too for also being a part of my journey, because I learned so much being in your presence as well. So thank you so much for all of this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and letting me share my story. Hopefully I inspire at least one person that's listening.
Absolutely. There's no question. There's no question that you will. I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me. And don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode. And please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram. And if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.